High drive. Left center field. Oh, no, he didn't. Yes, he did. See ya. Another home run for Judge. 5-1 Yankees, number 43.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 111 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. Or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. Trade deadline bonanza today. I mean, I feel like saying bonanza is a bit of an oversell. It was a little less climactic than it was last season. In my opinion.
It was not a bonanza because Juan Soto was on the trading block and everything ground to a halt at a certain point and it was just dead. And you notice like it was an absolute flurry of activity today when it was not completely dead, but kind of dead for a couple days. And especially once the Soto deal was done, then, you know, the floodwaters really opened. And not quite as much for the Mets as I would have liked, but, you know, got a little bit. You know, I'll say the Mets are a better team than they were yesterday. I think the Yankees are a better team than they were yesterday, and now we can start arguing about if they paid too much to do it.
And like, I don't want to say it's not a good comparison as far as how the Yankees did at the deadline this year compared to last year. Last year was a bit of a eyewash. I feel like they picked up Gallo, they picked up Rizzo, right, which were exciting, if for no other reason than they happened like within like the last hour and a half before the deadline.
Yeah, just more timing than anything else.
Where today we're. Rather, this year, their big move was to pick up Frankie Montas from the A's, and that happened yesterday.
Right.
The day before the deadline. So they had a few moves today that were surprising, but because there was no, like, urgency that the deadline approaching gives any move that happens within the hour before it's about to close.
Right, right.
It makes it feel like this deadline was kind of a bust, but it actually wasn't. I mean, the Yankees needed an impact starter. Cashman went out and got him. The biggest surprise was obviously trading Montgomery to the Cardinals for an injured Harrison Bader, who is a center fielder. I don't really know what to make of it. You guys know me. I don't pretend to fucking know value, and I'm not going to sit here and try to be like, well, he's exactly worth this, and he's worth that, and I don't know.
So are they saying that Harrison Bader in a boot is going to play a better outfield than Joey Gallo? Discuss.
That is also Gallo, who thankfully they moved him because this just was not, it was a forced marriage.
That seemed inevitable.
Yeah, he just has not performed well here.
A forced marriage. That's a good way to put that, forced marriage.
I actually stole that from a great interview that Mike Francesa had of A-Rod. When I guess shit was hitting the fan at some point during A-Rod. This was before, okay. I think, the post. This was before the PED stuff. I think maybe, I'm going to guess 2006.
So back when we thought shit was hitting the fan, but shit had not really started to hit the fan yet.
Right. Yeah. Shit hitting the fan at that point in time was just him not performing on the field as opposed to. Right. And there's a great, like, you know how, like, they do those, like, beach days? Like, the New York Sports Radio does that where, like, they will do their show from, like, the Jersey Shore.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it seemed like the interview happened there because it was definitely outside. And okay. Frances is sitting there talking, A-Rod. I know this is a podcast, so you guys can't see, but anyone who follows me on Twitter has seen me use this as a reaction picture. A-Rod has the headphones on, and he's just like, as Frances is like, listen, this was a forced marriage between you and the Yankees. Maybe it's just not working out. And A-Rod just is not looking at him, is looking off camera just with the most pissed off look on his face. And ever since then, I've been dying to use that term, so thank you. Joey Gallo, how coincidental, number 13, allowing me to bring it back.
Well, speaking of bringing it back, that interview with Francesa could not have been more depressing than Lindsay Adler's interview with Joey Gallo on his way out.
Ugh.
How can you not feel for the guy, man? Like, and credit to him, like he was very objective about himself and very brutally honest. And, you know, I think he even said at one point, he's like, you know, I feel like a piece of shit.
Yeah. And there was another article that came out today with an interview with him, It was clear by the fact that he even did those two articles that he knew that he was going to be moving, that I'm sure the franchise...
Yeah, one last go around with the media. Yeah.
Right. And apparently he had emptied his locker in the clubhouse last night. So it was, you know, like, obviously it's a surprise to fans, or,
well,
not really, but he knew that he was going to be gone.
Speaking of surprise, right, yeah, you know, he knew, cleaning out his locker and stuff, which is in stark contrast to, if you look in Chicago, Wilson Contreras doing the whole goodbye tour, and then they don't trade him, and now he's just on the Cubs for the rest of the season.
Same thing with Rodon on the Giants. Right, he was, like, hugging all of his teammates after his start last night. So Gallo's interview with NJ.com was just as sad.
Yeah.
And listen, I get it. The guy made almost $11 million this year, regardless of his production. He's still a millionaire. He's still a professional athlete.
I hate that we still have to qualify it like that, but we do. You're right. Yeah.
And I get that. I'm not trying to say, like, oh, boo-hoo, everyone listening should feel bad for Gallo. But I know that I feel bad for him because, listen, these guys don't want to perform poorly, no matter what market they're playing in.
Right.
And this market... Listen, New York fans pride themselves on being demanding, Yankees fans especially, on being demanding, on being tough on their players. And whether that's, you know, whatever, people are allowed to fan however they want.
Right.
With that being said, it has to be okay for a player who did not thrive in this environment to be able to acknowledge that.
Right.
It's always interpreted as, I saw people like, oh, he's, you know, blaming the fans. That's not how I saw it. He was basically saying... It's really hard to play here, and they don't give you the benefit of the doubt. If you don't perform, they're not going to be easy on you. And he's right.
Yes, I agree. But, like, even more specifically, what I saw was, like, it's interesting the level to which people hear what they want to hear and read what they want to read. Because Yankees fans, their reaction was like, oh, you know, it's not us. You know, it's the organization. New York is tough. The media. Blah, 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 blah. Non-Yankee fans read that. They're like, yeah, Yankees fans suck. Am I right? Drove them out of the Bronx.
The poor guy was like, yeah, I live in Manhattan. No, I don't go out of my apartment because he doesn't want to show his face. And yeah. Listen, that's not because he was feeling like fearing for his life. It's because he knows that he's going to be recognized. He's clearly a professional athlete. He's huge. So it's not like he can
even
be.
He's not
going
to hide. Right. Yeah, he's not going to shrink into a crowd.
Exactly. He had just put a fucking hat and sunglasses on.
Although in New York, there's a lot of Italians. You know,
that's
maybe
true.
His odds are a little bit better, but still.
Except they're not nearly as tall and not in that good a shape. Let's be honest.
Wait, are you on air calling Italian short? No, we're not going down that road. just for the record, I am just Italian enough to make that joke, but also, like, not that Italian, so I am going to make the joke.
And I am not Italian, but I am Jewish, and we're also short and stocky, so, I mean, it's, I feel like it's cut from the same cloth.
Well, Italians and Jews have, like, that unspoken agreement. They can, like, play each other in movies and TV shows and stuff, right? There's a camaraderie there.
So Gallo got moved to the Dodgers. On one hand, happy for him to get in a new start, but like...
Speaking of Italians and Jews, so Gallo gets traded to the Dodgers. How do we wind up there?
Well, because it's like, I can only... I'll wax poetic about feeling bad for Joey Gallo for fucking 40 minutes if I have to, but you guys get
the
gist.
But end of the day, he's off your team and they're better for it. Let's get real.
Absolutely. Like, this was not going to work out, and that's fine. Every trade doesn't have to work out. That's fine. I feel for the guy in that he went from one pressure-filled market... right to another. Like, the Dodgers are also in a playoff push.
Right.
And any Dodgers fans listening, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if you guys are quite as nasty as New York fans can be when it comes to a player not playing up to their potential, but I really don't know. I can't speak to it, so I can't really say one way or another if it's going to be easier on him if he continues to not play like the player he can be.
I'm just familiar with the rep of Dodgers fans beating up other fans, not necessarily
so
emotionally beating up players. So I think he's probably okay.
Yeah, as long as he's not a secret San Francisco Giants fan, he should be okay going out to the parking lot.
Just forgets and wears some Yankee gear on his way out of the game, just gets his ass handed to him.
He wasn't the only move. I mean, we mentioned Frankie Montas. They also picked up right-hand pitcher Lou Trevino. So now the Yankees corner the Trevino market in the league.
Finally, the Trevino battery we've all been clamoring for.
Last night, the Padres broadcast, they like showed a graphic on screen of the Yankees picking up Montas and Trevino. And they showed our Trevino, Jose Trevino.
Oh,
there was a picture of Frankie Montas. Someone made the point to say that they made sure to like, they like basically removed Montas's beard that I guess he had from the graphic, but then they put the wrong Trevino in there. Like, talk about spending your time on the wrong
That's
thing.
That's so funny.
Since we last recorded, the Yankees also picked up Andrew Benintendi. That was like a pre-deadline. That was a few days ago. He's already played, and I think this is his third game tonight.
He's the... He's the Yankees' Tyler Naquin.
Oh, yeah, that's right, like, Naquin.
Yeah.
They also picked up right-hand reliever Scott Efros from the Cubs, who they traded, I think, some top pieces for him, which is fine. They needed to shore up their pen a little bit. They need that extra arm. He's been lights out this year. And like someone pointed out, that they know that if Cashman gets his hands and Matt Blake get their hands on a pitcher that you've never really heard of, he's going to become a weapon of mass destruction.
Correct.
I think it was Nick Stellini who said that. Someone was like, he's already a weapon of mass destruction. And so that means he's going to be extra lethal coming out of the pen.
Yeah, what's the next level above weapon of mass destruction? It's kind of like a terminal.
It is. That's a ceiling,
what's
I guess.
Bigger, right?
I know trading Monty seems to hurt. He's struggled his last few starts. And hyperbole aside, I know a lot of Yankee fans were like, DFA Monty, but I get that that's hyperbole, and I'm certainly no stranger to
but
using hyperbole
see,
myself.
I love mentioning it on this pod. We saw the endowment effect in full, effect. walked myself into that corner. But yeah, you know, because we were talking about this earlier, actually, like, you know, Montgomery's last few starts were not great. But now that he's traded, it's a travesty. It's like, oh, he should have been a Yankee for life. It's like, whoa, hang on. Pick a lane with this guy. But again, it's like, oh, well, you know, I can shit on him. He's my pitcher. He's my pitcher to lose, and now you overvalue him, and on the dance goes.
And it's just, listen, I fucking hate Domingo Germán. With that. I fucking hate him. He's a scumbag. I wish he wasn't on this team. And you can tie Aroldis Chapman to him and throw them both off a boat with a fucking cinder block tied to them. That being said, he's coming off a major injury. He's only pitched 12 innings so far this year. Unfortunately, his domestic abuse history has no effect on his value. We know that is a non-issue when it comes to this shit. Being injured, having an arm injury, and not having that much of a repertoire at the pro level to show for it. Oh, fuck. Sorry. We're watching the Yankees-Mariners game live, and we just witnessed... Who is this?
Drum roll. Who's that?
Sam Haggerty hit a solo home run to break a 6-6 tie. I mean, it's only the seventh inning.
Who's Littke, pitching? Is that Littke?
Luis Littke, who I am surprised to still see on the team, if I can be honest with everybody. I thought he was going to be gone in some sort of package.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, for no other reason than Twitter said that he would be.
Okay.
Not because I have any sort of,
well,
like,
you know,
dream
I heard about this robust market for relievers. Yeah, when the Mets got rid of Holderman. It's like, oh, okay, but we're not going to get that lefty we needed? No, really? Okay.
You guys can have him, because apparently I put him on the trading block, so I guess it's too late.
Yeah, you put him on the trading block in the evening of August 2nd, Emster.
Is this trade for Monty, is this a bad move? I don't know. I know people are like, oh, we needed arms. They got arms. They got three arms, as a matter of fact. Two for the bullpen and one for the rotation. Would I prefer Monty over Germán? Yeah, obviously. Everyone would, which is why he was able to be traded.
Right, because he has value and Germán really doesn't.
And I was thinking about it, and listen, you're only allowed to have 13 pitchers on a 26-man roster.
Right.
Germán has no options left. He costs them less money in salary than Monty. He also probably can't get much of a return if you were to trade him. He would have to be part of some sort of package deal where they were able to trade Monty straight up.
Right.
For another major league level player. Bader has at least another year left on his contract, I'm pretty sure. I don't think he's a free agent until 24.
No, I think he's under control, yeah.
And he is in the, like, 92nd percentile in sprint speed. He's in the 92nd.
Not right now, he's not.
Well, yeah, he's
Sorry,
injured.
I had to.
No,
yeah.
I know. I get it. That is...
That was a bad joke. It was terrible.
No, but it's true. It is true. They move for someone who's injured, but there's also... I feel like that works for the Yankees because they don't have the roster space. I feel like... And I know it sucks, but I feel like Carpenter is going to be the odd man out when it comes to the playoff roster. Because what Bader adds
really,
to the bench...
Really? As productive as he's been?
The only reason I say that is because you can't really play him anywhere in the field.
Yeah, he's a DH and DH only, right?
When Stanton comes back, that's going to create a logjam, and I would much rather have Giancarlo Stanton than Carpenter as a DH and an outfielder flex. And he is useless off the bench besides for a pinch hit. Like, you can't put him into run, whereas Bader has elite speed. So the hope is that he'll be good to go come September
and then
be good to go for October, and then you have speed off the bench.
Not to be crass or direct, I guess, but Carpenter's purpose is kind of like, hey, if Judge and Stanton stay healthy until the playoffs, he's kind of served his role.
Right, that's exactly right. He's there, and I know it sucks because he's played so well, but... he's going to come back down to earth. I mean, he already did a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
He's still maintaining. He's still managing to be productive. Like, it's not like he's now, like, over the century.
That start was unsustainable. Oh, he came out so hot.
Judge was just named, I mean, he won AL Player of the Week 2 weeks in a row and then just got July Player of the Month. If he didn't, I would not have been shocked if they gave it to Carpenter, because his July, okay. I mean, he fell off the last week or so, but his July was so absurd that he was the only other guy in the AL who kept up with Judge, which is crazy.
Still, Judge, how can you not give it to Judge? Like,
and I, listen, was I don't know.
43 home runs now, Judge?
Yeah, dude. 43 home runs.
It's stupid.
When he hit 52 home runs in his rookie season, he hit number 43 in September.
Oh, wow.
Like,
Jeebus.
He really has the American League record in his sights, which is 61 home runs hit by Roger Maris in 1961.
Oh, he's on pace for, like, what, 67?
I don't even know what the pace is at this point. Yeah. This motherfucker has 9 multi-home run games. 9!
That's...
Jose Trevino just had his first multi-home run game of his career.
Of his career, yeah.
Judge has 9 this season.
Ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous, and yes, I will be segueing off of my own thing. Did I mention how ridiculous it is that the Mets did not get a left-handed reliever? I know I did. That's rhetorical. This is my segue, and I'm sticking to it. So the Mets had an okay trade deadline. Okay. I'm not a doomer. I'm not going to say it was bad, because objectively, again, end of the day, I'm not a prospect hugger, and even at that, we didn't lose any major prospects, or rather didn't give up any major prospects.
Right.
And as we said in the beginning of the show, much like the Yankees, maybe not to the same extent as the Yankees, but much like the Yankees, the Mets are a better team than they were before the deadline, which is ultimately the goal.
Right.
Now, if we dig
with
in...
With that being said,
so the Mets found themselves in a position of a few different needs. Starting pitching was not one of them, and I am a little sick of the framing of... We'll get to DeGrom being back into it, but, you know, it's like, DeGrom coming back is just like an acquisition. It's like, okay, no, it's not. He was supposed to be part of the plan from day one, and now it's August, and he's finally, hopefully, back to being part of the plan. So let's not think of that. Speaking of being part of the plan, going into the season when it became apparent that Cano was not it, you know, post-steroids, he was just not going to be the DH that we needed, the plan kind of became, okay, platoon. J.D. Davis is a righty. Dom Smith is a lefty. Platoon that DH, which would have worked great if Dom Smith had decided to hit a home run in a calendar year, which he has not. And Davis was just maddeningly inconsistent, as he always has been, to an extent. So the two-headed DH, in theory, could have worked, but then both guys didn't work out. So then we fast forward to obtaining Vogel back from the Pirates for Colin Holderman, which was the comment I made earlier. Billy Epler said, when they were like, oh, you're giving up Holderman, really? He's like, well, there's a robust market for relievers, so don't worry about it. And we proceeded to just replace him. We didn't add any more relievers. We just got another one. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So Vogel back from Pittsburgh, he fulfills...
What a fucking tank.
I like him because he is like, if I lost 20 pounds and put on a Mets jersey, I look exactly like that. He's the same height as me, and he's like, he's listed as 30 pounds less. I think it's more like 15 or 20. We were talking about this.
Maybe on his fucking debut.
Right, and is that to make me feel a little bit better about myself? Maybe a little, but... So Vogelback covers the lefty side, so upgrade from Smith. And then we wound up the last trade that we did, well, not the last, but I guess the last kind of big trade was Darren Ruff for J.D. Davis, which straight up would have been great, but it was Darren Ruff for J.D. Davis, Thomas Sapucki, and then 2 more pitching prospects, which I did write down, but as a non-prospect hugger, I'm not going to say their names out loud. You can look them up.
That's a spirit.
Yeah, they're pitching prospects. That, to me, that was the one where it's like, that much for, you know, for one guy, for what is Ruff now, 36 years old, for a 36-year-old platoon DH?
He is 3 months younger than me.
Right. So granted, it wasn't any major prospects, but it was still kind of like, that seemed like a little bit much, but okay. So we got our DH taken care of. And we had said previously that one of the Mets' like earlier deals, much like Vogelbach, was getting Tyler Naquin, from the Reds. Philip Deal also came in that deal, but I believe he's down in the minors right now. And that was also for 2 lower-level prospects. So Naquin kind of fills in the... we had the Travis Jankowski, was kind of like our speedster off the bench. So Naquin adds a little bit of outfield depth. He's decent in outfield. He's a better bat than Jankowski. And he's decently fast. Maybe not Jankowski fast, but he's fast. So it's a little bit of... Maybe not Harrison Bader style wheels. Well, you know, no, he's actually faster than Hader right now. We keep coming back to that, right?
Touche.
But yeah, so Vogelbach, Naquin, Ruff, and then kind of the last thing that happened was we talked about we gave up Holderman. We did get a reliever back. We wound up getting Michael Givens from the Cubs. He's been decent. He has a, I think, 2.2-something ERA in 40 innings, so not bad. Decent against lefties and righties. But it was disappointing, and I question how much I let myself get wrapped up in some, like, rumors and hype and stuff, because right. We were... One of the big ones was David Peterson and Wilson Contreras on the Cubs. Now, catching's in a weird spot, because we kind of, you know, going back to going into the season with a plan, the plan was never really with an offense-heavy catcher.
Right.
Right. It was James McCann and Thomas Nito going in. McCann's had issues staying healthy has been the problem, which has led to Nito playing a lot. Nito's a great backup catcher, but he's exactly that. He's no more than that. His bat sucks. You know, he's a every 4 or 5 days kind of guy. So to see them not make a move for that, that was disappointing. Apparently the Contreras price was really high. Okay, but aren't you Steve Cohen? And whatever. Right. I know. We're dealing with prospects, not cash. So
and
I
they
it.
Just pay, they're paying McCann fucking like $11 million
right, yeah.
a year.
McCann's not cheap. And, you know, there was some speculation that the Mets were hesitant to move too much in the way of prospects. We just moved Pete Crow Armstrong, which was a top outfield prospect last year. So might be a little gun shy on that level. So again, it's one of those things where, like, I can't say that the trade deadline was a failure, because it wasn't, but it might not have been all that it could be. And I'm not going to segue into the Juan Soto trade just yet, because I do have to mention that despite the fact that I don't like framing it as an acquisition, because it's not, DeGrom did return tonight.
Right.
Before we pivot onto other stuff. And, you know, he was clearly under some kind of pitch count. He just only threw 59 pitches, but decent line, 5 innings pitched, gave up 3 hits, an earned run, struck out 6. He was consistently pretty effortlessly hitting 3 digits on the radar gun. So all early signs are good. Seeing Scherzer and DeGrom pitch back-to-back was good.
Yeah,
it's not looking like we're going to get back-to-back wins out of it, but, you know, what are you going to do? Hey, the Mets are coming on. We're on a 7-game winning streak right now, so we lose one. All right, what are you going
to
do?
And also, they're just trying to make it comfortable for DeGrom and get him back to, like, where he's used to being, which is getting a no decision.
Exactly.
So, here we go.
Right, yeah, it was funny because they were like, oh, what, no run support again? And then Lindor tied it, and then whoever came in after DeGrom gave up, like, 4 runs. It was like, oh, okay, now we're back to normal. And here's my sort of rough attempt at a segue into the big news of the day. Speaking of players that I thought would have helped and we didn't get, Josh Bell, the big news of the day, wound up with the San Diego Padres, and nobody else in that deal, if
no,
memory
that's
serves.
It. Yep. That was it. Yeah, just that Josh was Bell. A blockbuster deal for Josh Bell.
Yep. Thanks for listening to Breaking Balls this week.
Like, listen, I hadn't. There was at no point that I honestly thought the Yankees were ever going to make a move for Soto. That being said, I was still so salty sitting at my desk at work, and I have so many friends that I've made that are Padres fans on Twitter.
Right.
Trying to pretend that I was happy for them was like, oh my God. And I know it sounds crazy because I'm a Yankees fan and like Yankees get a lot, you know, they're always in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatever. I still want every player just like any good Yankees fan does, okay?
You don't have to be rational.
Right?
Fandom is often not rational. But, oh, that was the other segue I was going to use. And it's not mine. I stole this from somebody on Twitter. I don't remember who. But now that Juan Soto is on a serious team, who the Mets could potentially see in the postseason, and you didn't pick up a lefty reliever?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go send, what's his face?
Joely Rodriguez
out to face Juan Soto? Oh, God. But yeah, so Josh Bell and Juan Soto too, I guess, to the Padres. Quite the haul. So this actually got interesting, because Luke Voit wound up going, Mackenzie Gore, a few prospects. It was like
CJ Abrams, which was their top prospect, I'm pretty sure.
Right. I'm torn, because on the one hand, was this return a little low? It's hard to say, because I'm also like, you know, being in the NL East, I don't think that the Nationals were ever going to really seriously talk to us about that. Except like, okay, give up Alvarez, give up Beatty,
right,
give up
everybody.
Vientos. Right, they wanted everybody. So that was never going to happen for us. I'm over it, as much as I want him on the Mets too, just like you want him on the Yankees. But the interesting part in all of this was Eric fucking Hosmer. I'll say that again. Eric fucking Hosmer almost torpedoed this trade.
What John is talking about is Hosmer was included in the trade, much to the joy of Padres Nation, because they are so fucking tired of him. It's insane. He has not played well for them, suffice to say. He has a no-trade clause and there's 10 teams on his list. It's not full no trade,
right.
Just 10 teams. One of them is the Nationals.
Yeah, I was going to say, you think like the bottom five teams might be on that list?
He obviously had to go somewhere after this. There was no chance that he was going to stay in San Diego, because obviously he said no. He did not agree to that trade, but they had to move him because that is a fucking ballsy move for the Padres to put that pressure on him, knowing that that's a team on his no-trade list and still putting that out to the public anyway. Because even though he's well within his right, and I agree with him that he should have leverage it if he has to, say no if that's not what he wants, because that's his right and that's what he negotiated right. In his contract. The Padres tried their best to force him to do something by putting it out to the public, and now it's like, now you can face the wrath of the fans and the media who try to make look to be a fucking asshole in this.
But then what was so funny is like half an hour later, it's like, also, we're trading you to the Red Sox.
The Red Sox being like buyers.
The Red Sox doing? They sold Christian Vasquez, which was another one where it's like Vasquez goes for two prospects, and it's like, Mets, we didn't have two prospects. I don't know. That one, I'm torn, not to bring it all the way back to the Mets, but I'm torn on the catching situation, because it's like Alvarez is close. We went in with the defensive catcher mindset, but there were guys available.
Right.
You know, between Contreras and Vasquez. So I don't know. But anyway, back to this. Yeah. So Boston, they're in this weird in between. Like,
I don't know what they're, because the AL East is so weird, because even though they are in last place, they are still over 500. And they are still very much in it as far as like the wild card is concerned. So first of all, I don't know if you guys saw it, but Christian Vasquez seemingly found out that he was traded because the Red Sox are in Houston.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this, yeah.
Pre-game interview yesterday on the field in Houston, and they're like,
how do you feel about being traded to the Astros, Christian?
It's a business.
What do you think about going to that team, considering where they're at in first place?
So, like, any comment on, you know, being traded to Houston? And he just had this, like, thousand-yard stare and was just like, it's a business. And then someone ushered him away. It was, like, so sad.
That's so fucked up for the team. Just to, like, not, like, hey, listen, sit down with the PR person for 5 minutes. You know, plan your attack strategy.
Get out there.
No, not even that. Just go warm up in our team's uniforms.
Not only did they got Hosmer, but they also got somebody else too, and I can't remember who. And it was like, huh? The Red Sox.
Tommy Pham.
That's right, Tommy Pham. So now they have that because they're very much in play. On a different side of that same coin, people were confused because the Orioles traded Mancini, who has been like their.
He was like
their fucking franchise player.
Well, you know why? Because now Rutschman's up, so it's like, oh, you're not Mr. Oriole anymore. Bye. Sorry.
They traded him to the Astros. I know Astros fans were hoping for Bell, but that just wasn't. Obviously, the Nationals were trying to move him with.
Yes.
I mean, talk about if everyone remembers, the talk was that they were going to try to stick Corbin in that trade.
That was like last episode, early talk. Yeah.
I mean, talk about an upgrade. Trying to shove Corbin into that trade where now the Padres get Bell, who's fucking excellent, but that's besides the point. Mancini is now an Astro, and I guess the return wasn't what people think it should have been, and there was all of this, oh, what are the Orioles doing? You know, their fans must be pissed. They can get a wild card spot, blah, blah, blah. The Orioles have a very clear plan. Now, I'm not one to, like, defend tanking and that, but that is a strategy that teams employ successfully.
It's because, you know, there's bad teams where it's just like there's floundering and there's no hope. And there's bad teams where it's like, okay, they may actually be formulating a strategy to try and get out of this.
Right.
And that's what it looks like in Baltimore.
Oh, totally. And they are on their way up, clearly. They are not in their window yet, as far as they're concerned.
Oh, not close, no.
Unloading Mancini has been part of their plan, clearly, since they did it. They didn't have to, but they did because they are building towards something.
Right.
They know that this year, even if they can sneak into the postseason, short of a miracle, and not even a 2019 Nationals miracle, they had a much better rotation than the Orioles do now. Short of a literal Angels in the Outfield style miracle, they weren't going to do shit in the postseason. So, like, why not make the moves now if it's going to make them a little bit better and give them more depth a few years from now? And hey, they may never, the guy that they traded Mancini for, He may never fucking sniff the major league level for the Orioles. He could be flipped
but
in a year
Mancini
or two.
Mancini wasn't going to be part of a winning season anyway.
No, so. Mancini is on the wrong side of 30 as far as Major League Baseball is concerned.
And we know from wrong side of 30.
And if anyone knows, it's us. So, I mean, I don't hate it. And the fans, Yankee fans were trying to like, you can't put yourself in another fan base's shoes. Especially when you are a Yankees fan. Our view of the world as a fan is totally skewed. I mean, the Yankees just celebrated their 31st year in a row of having a winning record at home. That is literally unprecedented
in
the
league.
Yeah. We would be pissed off if the Yankees made a move like this, but that's because the Yankees are trying to maintain a winning record no matter what the rebuild every year. The
right.
Orioles fans have already accepted what their team's plan is.
Yeah, they're on board the ride at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
They are loving this year. The team is playing really well, and they know that they are not in their championship window yet.
Right.
So that bodes pretty well for them. That's how it felt in 2017. Not for nothing, as a Yankees fan, it was a magical run. But the team was technically not in their window yet. They just caught lightning in a bottle with
Todd
Frazier.
Just enjoy this while it lasts.
And they rode it to the ALCS.
To hell.
Todd Frazier. I still can't believe he was on the Yankees in 2017.
Did you know that Todd Frazier is originally from... No, I'm kidding.
Oh. I was sitting here rapt like, go on.
From where? Now, there were some other big trades, but I want to complain about the National League East for a minute. Can I complain about the National League East for a minute? I'm going to complain about the
I
National League East for a minute.
I started this podcast to complain, so yes.
About the National League East? We both know that's a lie.
About anything.
So part of what was frustrating about the Mets trade deadline results was that the Phillies and the Braves seemed to get a little bit better than we did.
Oh, yeah. The Phillies.
So the Braves, first and foremost, we'll get to the fucking Phillies. The Braves, first and foremost, perhaps the biggest improvement they could have possibly made, they finally DFA'd Robbie Cano. They cut the dead weight. No, but on a serious note, they did sign Austin Riley to a $212 million 10-year deal. So he is not going anywhere. How did they do this? He's like, I'm not interested in like going finding out my value. I'm gonna stay here for $20 million a year.
It's, you know, they sell them that's like, hey, we already won a World Series. We're going to win more.
Yeah,
why don't
do
you
it
stay
again.
With us?
Right. Yep.
Because if you don't, we're going to trade you. So, or you end up like Freddie Freeman, where
right.
now you've left here. Everyone hates you in the place where you won a title, and you're a hired gun in another franchise, and your career is not going to look the same when you look back on it.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, he's clearly going to be taking up the mantle of Chipper Jones now, for me as a Mets fan. It's going to be Austin Riley now. I already kind of hate him. Now I'm going to really hate him. And then in addition to that, the Braves also got Raisel Iglesias from the Angels to shore up their bullpen. So they got better. And then the fucking Phillies. Okay, a couple of these birds.
Maybe got better?
Maybe. It's they're annoying, though, because they're always annoying. So they got Brandon Marsh from the Angels. Okay.
Whatever.
Fine. You know, you want them to be your long-term outfield solution? Okay, fine. Whatever. This is where it starts getting annoying, because David Robertson was one of the guys that I wanted. That rumor, that was the big rumor that I bought into, the Contreras-Robertson rumor. So Contreras not moving at all sucked, and then Robertson, not only did he not move, but he goes to the Phillies.
Yeah,
that's
not gross. What you want.
Now I got to face him. That sucks. And now this, I don't know if it made them better or not, but to what extent, but it's just annoying. They also got Noah Syndergaard from the Angels. So Thor's back on the East Coast, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see how that goes. I'm hoping that the Mets just absolutely shell him now. That would just be fantastic.
I mean, without Harper, and Castellanos is having a Gallo-esque season.
Gallo-esque. I love
it. That's, quick aside, there are a lot of players that are playing just as poorly as Joey Gallo, but aren't getting the same headline space. Castellanos is one.
They don't play in New York.
Muncy is another. And Bellinger is another. They have been just as bad as Gallo, but I digress. The Phillies, all they really have going for them is their pitching, right? They have Wheeler, they have Nola. Their starting pitching has been decent. Am I wrong in that?
Well, yeah, because the whole thing was like, you know, Harper and Castellanos, everyone hitting home runs, and that just hasn't worked out offensively. So they're like, I don't know, 10-ish games over 500. Like, you know, they're not a bad team.
Yeah, they're fifth in FWAR for pitching staff.
Right. 14. Yeah. Well, I mean, Nola's pitching out of his mind.
Yeah. And Wheeler's always really good. So I guess, what is Thor? How is he going to fit into their rotation? He's going to be like their three guy, I would imagine.
Emotional support for Wheeler, their former teammates.
That's he's an emotional support pet.
It's for his social media presence. So yeah, so that's just some of my personal little gripes with the NL East. But there were some more like impactful, interesting trades that happened.
The Padres, again, got fucking Hader.
Padres are going all in, man.
I can't believe that the Brewers traded
Hader.
That's
the weird part, is like, you're in first place. He's one of the best closers in the league. And I could say that now because Edwin Diaz has achieved his final form. He's one of the best closers in the league.
Well, no, Diaz is the best closer.
I know, that's why Hader is one of. Diaz is the.
Yes.
But no, seriously though, well, I was serious, but to continue to be serious. yeah, Milwaukee. I mean, yeah, they got a haul. It was like four prospects, I think, or maybe a player and three prospects. But point being, Hader? Like, what's the plan for the postseason, guys? Like,
and especially, like, they've been to the postseason a bunch in recent years, but they've only won one series right in this time. So after the Hader move went down, the official account on Twitter, like, I don't know if it was from their GM or their president of baseball operations, they tweeted, like, it was basically like a whole statement defending this. I feel like if you have to write out an entire statement and you have it ready to go to hit send on all your social media platforms right after that trade becomes public, maybe not the best move.
Yeah, if the PR team's like, all right, so we're going to want to open in defense mode. It's like, is this a smart move?
We have weakened our defense by moving Hader, but we are now opting to go right into defense with the fans.
We are going for the offensive. On social media.
And you trade him to a team in the National League. That was the other thing. Now, the Padres had the system. They had the farm. So it was only going to be to so many National League teams.
That is a big overarching theme of this trade deadline. The Padres have been building to this trade deadline this year. That's one thing, like, you know, where people are saying, like, oh, the Mets didn't go. Well, the Mets don't have the resources in the farm. They don't have nearly the farm the Padres do. So the Padres are prepared for this, to their credit. You know, they put themselves in this position. Let's make no mistake. In addition to the savvy that we saw today.
Yes, 100%. And they went all in. Like,
yeah,
if this isn't the time, the Padres are, their franchise is 54 years old.
They've never won, correct?
They have never won the World Series. I believe they've made one appearance. I think 1998 might have been it.
Where yeah, they got you guys steamrolled them.
Stomped. Well, that was against that
Yankees team. Right. Yeah, please.
They've had six postseason appearances total in franchise history. Now, unfortunately for Major League Baseball, that is not that odd to be around for half a century and not really make it to the promised land all that often.
It's true.
People were like, I don't know if you should sell the farm. Like, if you don't go for it now, what was the point?
What are you waiting for?
Why did you give $300 million to Manny Machado? Why did you give $350 million to Tatis? What was the point of spending half a billion dollars on guys like that? They just signed Musgrove to 5 years, $100 million, a day or two ago. Now's the time. So are Padres fans content to just not go for it? Is that what people are telling me? Well, they'd rather like maybe have some success or sustained Yankee success in that they just are over 500. Is that what you want? Or do you want a fucking World Series?
Well, let's also remember it's their bad luck that their window right now falls in when the Dodgers are the 2022 Dodgers.
Right.
So if they're going for it, they have to go balls to the wall, all out, like, you know, no holds barred. They got to go for it.
That's right. I mean, the Dodgers and, you know, there are different ways that teams set markets, right? Like, they talk about, they were waiting to move on the trading market for this trade to happen, and that's when the floodgates open. The same thing goes for the way that teams attack their overall plan to make it to the World Series. With the Dodgers doing what they do and in the manner that they do, other National League teams, they have to try to match that. You can't play Orioles tank for a bunch of years and then just hope that the guys that you've developed and maybe add a piece here or there are going to do it, because that's not how the Dodgers are doing
it. Despite the fact that that exact strategy worked for the Washington Nationals, but you can't plan around that.
And but also the Nationals, they paid for Strasburg, they paid for Corbin, they paid for Scherzer.
Yeah, so they sprung for it. Yeah, that's right.
So like with the Dodgers having the farm system that they do, the player development that they do, and the money, this is the only way. The Padres have managed to basically rise from the ashes, it seems like. They were a fucking afterthought.
They were garbage, yeah.
And now all of a sudden, here they are.
Now, speaking of a team, and I know they're playing the Yankees and they're beating the Yankees right now, so I don't want to lean too heavily into this, but just to wrap up, like, you know, the major trades, another team that's trying to capitalize on a perceived window, you know, a season that's coming together for them, is the Mariners.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Those pitching moves. They got Jake Lamb from the Dodgers, and even bigger, well, the biggest, Luis Castillo from the Reds.
That hurt.
That's,
that hurt.
Yeah, now, again, my team was not one that needed starting pitching, but for any team that needed it, my God, that's who you wanted. Castillo was it.
100%. Like, it also hurts because Castillo absolutely mowed down the Yankees about a week ago, and now he's back in the Bronx, but in a different uniform for the Mariners.
Is he coming up the series?
He's pitching tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
Which is going to look like it's the rubber match.
Oh, wait,
as
so
of now,
scrap the show. We got to record tomorrow now.
We have to wait for the outcome
of
this.
Yeah, DJ Bingington, just delete it.
Everyone wanted Castillo. The Mariners went for it, much like with the Judge extension offer. And I know it's like, how are you making that connection? So hear me out. I don't doubt that the Cashman put in a good offer for Castillo and even for Carlos Rondon from the Giants. Just like they put in, they gave Judge a good offer. I don't fault either party for turning it down. You know what I mean? I didn't fault the Yankees for not giving a good offer. They did. I didn't fault Judge for betting on himself. I don't think that the Yankees came in with bullshit for Castillo. You know what I mean? Like, I trust that they actually made a good offer, but they weren't willing to part with Peraza. They weren't willing to part with Volpe or Dominguez. So if the minute that the Mariners came in with their top prospect, there was
That's
no chance.
That's a different conversation entirely.
Yeah, right. There was no chance. So this isn't on some, like, and obviously I don't know for sure what the Yankees offered, but because of what they were trying to do and what they gave up for Montas, I can trust that they offered good packages for both those pitchers. The Reds and then the Giants, respectively, not accepting them is what it is. I'm not over here like, Cashman, why didn't you do X, Y, or Z? I think that they did, but I understand why they weren't willing to part with those three guys, because it wasn't worth it for a year and a half of Castillo or whatever is left on Rodon's contract, you know?
Well, you know, and similarly, to bring it back to the Mets, like, there's a level of, there's definitely a level of trauma from all those Wilpon years that is not going away anytime soon, if it ever will. And it might not ever for some fans. But there's a level of, like, I gotta trust that, like you said, that, you know, that the Cubs were asking too much for Contreras, and that, you know, the reliever market did dry up, and that, like, you know, because, like, everything that they've done so far, again, it's, they don't have the record the Yankees have, but at the end of the day, the Mets have won 65 games this year.
Right. And they've been in first place for like 100 days.
Right. And the current administration front office got them there. So it's like, hey, you know what? Maybe these guys know what they're doing. They had a great, you know, they put together a great team in the offseason. And, you know, is it ideal to lose to the Nationals 5-1 the day of the trade deadline when it's a little underwhelming? No, those are bad optics. But it's important to remember it's not actually related. You know, it's just one of those coincidental things and whatever. But yeah, so again, I got to have trust. They've gotten us this far. You know, I got to trust that the market was what it was. They responded appropriately. They valued our assets and others' assets appropriately and did what they felt was genuinely the best for the team. So, you know, it does feel like a cop-out saying on the day of the trade deadline, well, how did it go? Well, you know, time will tell. We don't know yet. But that really is the fundamental truth of it. We don't know. You know, we can guess and we can say, oh, this looks good to me. This doesn't look good. At the end of the day, we're going to know in 2 months.
The teams are what they are. This is the Yankees roster. It is what it is.
Are you going to not watch because they didn't have the perfect trade deadline and the team's not exactly what you want? You know what I mean?
Like, right. I mean, at the end of the day, and I'm a big proponent of this, that you got to trust the process.
Mm-hmm.
I know people have replied to that with, oh, Brian Cashman hasn't won a title, you know, one title in 22 years. But don't be dense. They're not trying to win a title every single year out of those years. They just make it seem like they are because they value the entertainment product for their fans. So they put out a winning team.
And
may not win
that,
in the postseason.
In and of itself, it's kind of ironic the fans don't recognize. You
right.
Know?
So I trust the team's been in first place for 105 days. They have been the first, they were the first to 30 games, 40 games, 50 games, 60 games, and now 70 wins. They are in the division lead by 12 games in a very tough division. Cashman and his company, they built this team, so I gotta trust the process at this point because it is what it is. And on that note, let's get right into the voicemails. Our first voicemail is from Diego.
Hey guys, happy Sunday. In about an hour, we're gonna watch the Mets and the Padres. Hopefully, hopefully the Padres sweep. I don't know. Sorry, John. Anyway, so, you know, I was listening to the last episode, you know, while you guys were talking about the All-Star game and all that. I just thought, well, of course, after that, you know, I just had some thoughts what you where you think Juan Soto will land. I think as a Padre fan, I don't think he's going to be on our team. Just it's like the same thing last year when Scherzer was, oh, he's traded to San Diego. And then, oh, no, he went to L.A. Not saying Soto is going to L.A., but I just don't see the Padres unloading that much talent, even though that's what you're supposed to do to get a generational hitter like Juan Soto.
One eternity later.
This is Diego Ornelas on Twitter. As I said last week, I didn't think the Padres were going to get Juan Soto, but guess what? Not only did they get Juan Soto, but they also got Josh Bell to go along with it. AJ Preller, I mean, I have to eat my words with, you know, got one of the best superior hitters in the game at his young age. I mean, it is, and also at the same time, it is sad to see Hosmer go, but it is a business. He was declining, and the Padres are at a different level with Soto. So, unfortunately for the Yankees fans, they got to deal with Hosmer. Not that Hosmer's going to, I mean, he is still a veteran player, but he's not going to be the same Eric Hosmer, but you never know. He could give AL East headaches like he did when he was Kansas City. Anyways, hope to hear from you guys again. Thanks. Bye.
Diego, I'm so glad that we didn't have an episode last week, because hearing your first voicemail and then seeing that you had called today after the trade went down at 3 p.m.,
that was
just fucking perfect.
Funny, man. Yeah, just... I just don't think he's going to go to the Padres. Like, no, definitely not. They're not going to give up. Well, like we said, man, the Padres put themselves in that position. They had a robust farm and they utilized it. And you guys are going to be a problem now. So, hey, congratulations, man. Good for you guys.
And honestly, like, even though I'm was super salty and I'm still going to be forever salty, I would much rather Soto go to the Padres than to the fucking Dodgers. Like, mm-hmm. If he wasn't going to come to the Yankees, there isn't another team that I guess I would prefer he go to other than
not
a National League team on the other fucking coast.
Well, we were literally talking the other day, you and I, about how, like, if he were to go to the Dodgers, just, like, that level of overkill. Just, like, enough already with the fucking Dodgers, man. Who are they not going to get at this point?
And that's coming from me, a Yankees fan, right? Where they have overkill of them.
Who ostensibly should have no right to say that, but she has a point, people.
Diego, congrats on your new acquisitions, and good luck the rest of the season. Our next voicemail is from Nick.
Just listening to the last up, one of your bozos was the Angels, and everyone has sympathy for Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. Why? Now, Mike Trout originally got drafted by the Angels, so that wasn't his fault. But when he signed that mega deal, no player thinks about what's going to happen when you get that big money. All they care about is the big money. So he made his bet. And Shohei Ohtani literally picked his destination because of Mike Trout. So no people should feel bad for Trout or Ohtani. They knew what they were getting into when this team sucked. But Subway Series starts tonight. No DeGrom, but he's going to start in AAA. So what do you think is going to happen? Will we have a Lindor moment? Will Lindor and Stanton fight? Will we get a moment like we had last year? Take care, guys.
You guys thought this whole episode was going to go by and we weren't going to talk about what happened in the Subway Series. Well, thank you, Nick, for teeing that one up for me. The Mets swept the Yankees two games sweep. But, hey, we won both of them.
Yeah, I mean, you guys won both. There's no denying that. One of them was by 3 runs. So it's not like it was, eking out a win. And, hey, the Mets are a good team. This isn't like years past where it's like, oh, the Mets got lucky and beat the Yankees. Like, the Yankees and the Mets are both two of the best teams in the league. So,
right. Good
for the fucking Mets. I mean, what else can I even say? It was a fucking shitty series for the Yankees, and it is what it is.
No, and again, it was one of those things where, like, on the other side of that, had we lost to the Yankees, it's the same thing. The Yankees are debatably the best team in baseball right now. So, like, yeah, to win those two games, it was satisfying. It was great, but both the way that you don't read too much into losing them, you can't read too much into winning them. At the end of the day, there are a couple games in July. It's fun because of the dynamic with the city and, that rivalry, to whatever extent it's a rivalry. But, there's bigger things in both of our team's sights. And there's a nice little detour. You guys lost the detour, but that's really all it was at the end of the day.
I will say, though, the reaction, the sore losing reaction from Yankee fans was something that I wish I forgot about.
They do it to themselves, man, because all these Yankee fans set it up like, we got to, beat our little stepbrother into submission, time to show him who's boss. Like, why do you set yourself up for that? It's just a couple games, man. Like, enjoy them if you win them. I'm enjoying it because we won it. But if you didn't, it's not the end of your season. You know?
Also, own it. If you lost, just own
right.
it. The Mets played well. They outplayed the Yankees. End of story. People being like, oh, the Yankees didn't try. Oh, they played hard. All these excuses. It's like, yeah, they did try, actually, to win.
Oh, yeah, you know, they didn't care about those games. Get the fuck out of here.
Like, give me a fucking break.
Hey, we were fortunate, you know, obviously not celebrating an injury, but we lucked out in that we didn't have to face Stanton, which certainly helped. You know, it's a little bit less protection for Judge in the lineup. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily the full force Yankees. But, you know, at the end of the day, as a Mets fan, it's a cool feeling, you know, when the Mets take two, and as much as it's exciting, it doesn't feel like we just won the World Series. It doesn't feel like a season highlight. It feels like us taking care of business. So that's a big step up from previous years when taking two from the Yankees in the Subway Series might have been the highlight of the season. Right. It's like, oh, okay, it's all downhill from here. It doesn't feel like that. It's like, yeah, we won two. Okay, let's do it again. Let's keep going. You know what I mean? So it's a cool, more grounded kind of feeling. Enjoying the win, but no need to overinflate it with the Mets being good, you know?
And I absolutely agree with that because the Yankees lost. When we revisit this after they play two more Yankee Stadium, we'll see how humble and understanding I am if the Yankees win.
Hey, man, talk to me after we play five in a row against the Braves.
Nick, thank you so much for your call. Our next voicemail is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. You guys remember when the balls were completely dead at the beginning of the season and now they do not seem like it? Manfred's an idiot.
Quinn, I can only assume that your phone call came in either during the first game of that Mets-Yankees series or after it, where they hit fucking four home runs in, like, the first two innings of the game.
I would like to, in episode 112, hear Quinn call back. I'm curious your take, Quinn, on the Cardinals trade deadline, because you guys are in a contending position and didn't really do much. What do you think about that?
Well, they did get a big left-hander out of New York, Jordan Montgomery.
No!
Honestly, I don't know shit about the Central, as everyone knows, so I am actually interested to know. Like, does that make... Monty's a good picture. Does it make them better? Who is in their rotation besides Wainwright? I have no fucking idea.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, was that the one squeaky wheel that needed grease? Like, I don't know. I'm curious. I'm not a Cardinals fan.
Quinn, thank you so much for your call, and thank you to all of our callers. You guys are amazing. That about wraps it up for episode 111. We want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are awesome. This was a really exciting trade deadline, made way more exciting by us talking about it. I'll say that much.
I was gonna say, it seemed like it might not be for a minute there, but then, you know,
we saved the day,
picked up a little bit. Oh, we swooped in, and yeah, we did our thing.
We want to thank our callers, of course. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ Bingington. And we will catch you guys next week.